Hello. Most people say the problem exists between keyboard and chair, but now the user becomes too incomplete. And Dalia will tell us all about it. So give her a warm round of applause.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll try to be loud and quick. I'm a net artist. I work online since 1995, and already since 15 years, I also teach art and design online as well as interface design. I also keep GeoCities archive, and I write about GeoCities and in general about the web of the 90s. And more generally, I write about digital culture, digital art, and digital folklore. And usually, when I say digital folklore, people think that I mean hackers' humor. But this is not at all like this. What is meant with digital folklore are the visual, textual, audio elements, cultures that emerged from users' engagement with personal computer application starting from the last decade of their last century. So I mean user culture. And this time frame, when I say starting from the 90s, the time frame is there to distinguish user culture from the glorious home computer culture. To distinguish, but not to completely separate them from one another. I'm also the co-author of the Digital Folklore Reader, and this book is dedicated to the users, and it starts with the introduction that is entitled Do You Believe in Users? Let me please remind to you where this quote, this question comes from. Yeah, it comes from the legendary film Tron, 1982, and this very important moment. I hope
Look,
it will.
This is all a mistake. I'm just a compound interest program. I work at a savings and loan. I can't play these video games.
Sure you can, pal. You look like a national athlete if I ever saw one.
Who, me? Are you kidding? No, I run out to check on T-bill rates. I get out of breath. Hey, look, you guys are going to make my user, Mr. Henderson, very angry. He's a full branch manager.
Great. Another religious nut.
I'd say welcome, friend. But not here, not like this.
I don't even know what I'm doing here.
You believe in the users?
Yeah, sure. If I don't have a user, then who wrote me?
That's what you're doing.
Was it a bit too quiet? Could you hear the dialogue, yeah? The beauty of this moment is, of course, in the fact that this app, this program, says user and means both developer and their account manager, yeah? And of course, the significance of the episode is also, in a way, the word user is pronounced with a great respect. Let's fly now to 2008. And listen to Don Norman. Don Norman, the father of human-centered design, author of Design of Everyday Thing, Design of Future Things, and all other important texts about how things should be designed.
One of the horrible words we use is users. I am on a crusade to get rid of the word users. I would prefer to call them people. You know, we test people. What a strange thing. We design for people. We don't design for users.
So Don Norman does not believe in users, and he believes it's a horrible word. There are 25 years, quarter of the century, in between the episode and Tron and this speech Don Norman gave in 2008. And these were really 25 years of this term being degraded. And today it's usually used with negative connotations. If we listen to the theoreticians of recent years, of to their words from the recent years, for example, Lev Manovich, the author of The Language of the New Media, one of the main theoreticians of the new media. He says in 2011, for example, how do we call a person who is interacting with digital media? User, no good. And another theoretician, Janet Murray, is a pioneering interaction designer, author of the Hamlet on the Holodeck. She writes in 2012 in the introduction to her new book, Inventing the Medium. User is a convenient but narrow and outdated term, like interface. Interactor is someone who is not using a device but acting within the system. A user is seeking to complete immediate task. Interactor is engaged. Let's now listen to another big name, Edward Tufte. In some months ago at the conference, he said only two industries call their customers users, illegal drugs and software. And this is, I hope you're not agreeing with Edward Tufte with your applauses, because it's absolutely wrong to say, to proclaim things like this. First of all, because users are not customers. And second, it's in general, comparison with junkies, it's an ill rhetoric, as well as all other attempts to explain the word user go into pre-computer, so to say, pre-computer original history of the word user, and talking about connotations like somebody who is unimportant, who is just using, who is maybe even addicted and passive. Because indeed, the word user means an active position. I was very happy recently to find a text by Raymond Williams, written actually more than 50 years ago. Raymond Williams is known for explaining a lot of terms and etymology of the words to the general public. His most known book is Keywords, where he explains what sex, labor, technology, and other words mean, also consumers and customers. And in his previous book, The Long Revolution, he also talks about consumers. And with regret, he mentions, if we were not consumers but users, we might look at society very differently. For the concept of use involves general human judgments. We need to know how to use things and what we're using them for, and also the effects of particular uses on our general life. This is a very important explanation of the word user, so somebody who knows how to use things and what they are used for. But the thing is that software industry and IT industry, they service providers don't really need users who know how they use things and what they're using them for. They need customers and consumers, and so human bots, whom they gently call people. That's why in the Facebook office you can find notes like this. It's from the last year Christmas party. And that's why also a year ago, Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter and Foursquare, says, if I ever say the word user again, immediately charge me with $140. He didn't say it in this glitter text, of course. I allowed it myself to make some fan art to make it maybe that the future generations remember this. This idea of the IT and software industry to see users as consumers and customers is only half of the story, which explains why user is no good. Another thing is, another reason is in general the mainstream paradigm of computer technology development, and it is invisible computer. Here we can come again to Don Norman, his famous prediction from 1990, the computer of the future should be invisible. Sorry. He said it in 1990 as an answer to the question why interfaces don't work. they don't work because they are interfaces and they should vanish. And the computer of the future should be invisible as well. We now, we live in the future. Yeah, computers are still distinguishable and locatable, but they are so much not something you sit in front of anymore. And forecasts for invisibility, they are so optimistic that some companies already allow to themselves to put this prediction in the present tense, as Apple did it 2 years, 1.5 years ago, and applied it to a particular piece of technology and said, we believe that technology is at its very best when it's invisible, when you're conscious only of what you are doing, not the device you are doing it with. And now the last sentence, it's a more personal experience with technology that people have ever had. I ask you to now to pay attention to the last sentence again, to the word experience, technology, and people, and what they are staying it for. So these are people, not users. This is technology, not computer. And this is experience, but not interface. It is because it happens now everywhere. If you read announcements of the conferences in interface design sphere and in IT in general, these words, they just cease to exist. They're replaced with other ones. And this happens, so technology instead of computer, experience instead of interface, and people instead of users. And the field itself, yeah, step by step, got renamed. I mean, the field of interface design got a new name, experience design. There is another neighboring field, which is designed by gamification trend. Their users are addressed as gamers, and everything else is just an epic win. Yeah? And this is exactly the same tactic what we see here. So there gamers, customers, consumers, the main thing, not users, because the word user is stays on the way of computer to becoming completely invisible. Yeah, it destroys the illusion of computerlessness. But we need to take care about this word because invisible user is more of an issue as an invisible computer. Computers can get as tiny as and invisible as wanted, but their users should stay visible. Because if they use this word, then the existence of two classes of people, developers and users, is also not there anymore. And this is how users can lose their rights and the opportunity to protect these rights. And these rights are the right to demand a better software, the right to fail epically, the right to get your files back, the right to delete your files, and the fundamental right, yeah, the right to see the computer. So that's why in a year ago I wrote an essay, Turing Complete User, where I ask this question, what can be done to protect the term, the notion, and existence of the user? What arguments can be found to stop Don Norman's crusade, and how I can dispel Lev Manovich's skepticism? What do we know about the user beside the opinion that it's no good to be one? There are two things to understand about the users and their history. One is that users were invented before the computers. Not after, not parallel to computers, but really prior to the computers. All the important texts that you maybe ever read, important texts for the history of computing, they are, in fact, the history of the users. The authors like Vannevar Bush, Licklider, and Engelbart, and Alan Kay, and other authors at Xerox PARC, they all were imagining users, first of all. And in Turing Complete User essay, I'm also following this history and the picture of user from the scientists whose hands are free, to the Engelbart's ideal user who is developing together with the computer, or the lady with the royal typewriter, as it was imagined in Xerox PARC, or children by Goldberg and Alan Kay. And then further to the more modern views. And also, I said important to know that they were imagined before, but maybe these are just sentiments, some facts that are not so important. What is really important, that the users were imagined, their infringement of imagination. This picture is always projected on us. And there, whatever these imaginations are, there is a constant. And the constant is that the users are busy, always busy with something else. I have here a quote from quite a good book on interface design, and this is the advice to the developers how to think about the users, very gentle, yeah, in fact, to the users. But the main thing is here that the users are those who are busy with something else. So users, they are people who are not going to spend any thought on the computer at all. They are delegating repetitive tasks to the computer, and also they delegate to draw the border in between the repetitive task and mature thought to the computer. this delegation for the user is the most important thing. And of course, I understand that there are many hours a day, then this delegation and automation, they are required and enjoyed. But in times then all aspects of our life are computerized. It's not possible to accept this busy with something else as a norm, as a default. That's why I suggest also in this essay to see another mode of user, to have another picture. The user that was formed through three decades of adjusting general purpose technology to their needs, to the general purpose user. And general purpose user can write an article in their email client. They can lay out their business card in Excel. They can like without Facebook. They can tweet without Twitter. They can upload images without Flickr. They can have online affairs outside of online dating services. Yeah? They can make 6-second videos without Vine. Yeah? They can shave without they can shave in front of webcam without Shave Me app. Yeah? And they, of course, would be able to make selfies and to upload these selfies without new Justin Bieber's Shorts Me app. These users can be possibly also called universal users or Turing complete users as a reference to universal Turing's machine. But whatever name I choose, the main thing I mean is the user who is able to achieve her goals without respect to the primary goal of the software or the device. That we know about the universal machine, that there is nothing one computer can do what another can't, given enough time and memory. And the same goes to the Turing complete users. There is nothing one user can do what another can't, given enough time and respect. And this is then important to understand that general purpose user is in fact an ultimate user experience, if you want to think in the user experience terms, in the terms of the user experience design field. But what does it mean that for the software industry, yeah, for the services that are provided to us? Does it mean that to provide this experience, industry has to deliver imperfect tools or hold themselves from improving existing tools? Of course not. The thing is that the idea of perfection should be adjusted to the general purpose user. It should value users' involvement and ambiguity in software and interface design. Demanding their ambiguous software is only one of the things that computer users can do, only one of the steps. To go further and to think about the rights that we can have and how we can protect them, I made an extension to the Turing Complete user essay, and there is a platform where you and I can demand rights now. So this is the form I demand the right to. If you made it, it will appear, and your name will appear in Comic Sans, which is very important for me, as you could see. It's possible to discuss it, to upvote it, to downvote it. It's not a perfect discussion system at this moment, that it has to be improved. It's in a state of collecting ideas at this moment. But we have a beautiful home button, and when you click on it, so you are at the home page where all these users, user rights are listed at this moment. And they are quite different. They're on the different level of elaboration at this moment. So I tried now to group them at least a little bit. And here you can see there are something what could be called fundamental rights. And of course, for me, it is to see the computer, difficult to advocate for it because users are convinced that good computer is an invisible computer. And I myself, I also don't demand huge computers and bulky screens or whatever. But I mean that computers should be visible. You should see the computer even if it's invisible. Yeah, you should know that there is a computer. And to see it is a precondition for asking the question, what is this computer doing? To own data, this I borrowed from User Data Manifesto, the great manifesto that also deals with the same issue, how to protect user rights, written by Frank Karlicek, the founder of Own Cloud. And there are seven other points, read them, that elaborate on it. Then there is, of course, to install free software on your own computer, seen by many as maybe the only right that one could need, that free software is the answer to all the troubles. It's of course, it makes sense. Of course, it would be different if our world would be a free software world. Users would be more competent and more empowered, but still there would be users and there would be developers. So we shouldn't stay on this level as users. We should go to another level of precision and demands. So for example, to know wherever my hardware will run free software, as one user demanded. Or I think this was demanded by Brandon Howell, who was before here, to participate in society without having to use a particular software device or corporate website. I think you see that it's the next level of thinking about how I can protect myself, what I can demand. Some demands are obviously rages, yeah, that come out from bad experience with software. To not have my system made obsolete, to ignore updates, not to be interrupted by a program, my data not being converted. You know, you uploaded GIF, but it became a JPEG. This is what the user was talking about. To disconnect, this is now from experiences from the cloud. Yeah, the users shout to disconnect, to view offline, to securely delete my history, to actually delete my account, to be ungoogleable, and for example, to log out. I think this log out is a very elegant demand at this moment, and it's very meaningful and expressive. There is so much said about the right for privacy that humans, people, or citizens should have. And of course, as citizens, we should demand privacy. But as computer users on another level, yeah, you should demand the right to log out. And then then you can talk about the privacy on another level. There are some rights that are quite discussed, so a lot of disagreement about it. To get revenue, to get data stored in text format, to read source code, does it really have to do with the users and their rights or not. This is not discussed. Then something like a right to a web browser to see the URL, to have a real keyboard, to use cable, to resume where I left off, to have a real keyboard, to have a real keyboard, to copy and paste, to pull, to reply all. So are these just caprices of the users, or are these essential freedoms? This is something what is discussed now at our platform, but the main thing here that the thought is provoked. Yeah? Then you think what I can do and what computer can do. What was delivered to me as a usability feature and what I don't want to give away. And let me finish with the last one, with the right to undo. It was the first one in the system, and it still stays up there on the top, and I think we should really fight for it because of three reasons. First of all, the undo is one of not many generic commands and generic cross-application commands that are so important for design of ambiguous applications. Second, undo is a clear border in between the virtual and the real world, and soon you will want to find one. And then remember that in real life you can't undo. Yeah? It's easy. And the third, maybe sentimental one, is its historical significance. Undo was conceptualized in 1976. It marks the period when computers started to be used by people who did not program them. So it's arrival of the real user and so-called naive user. And it was given to the users not to scare them away, to give them the right to make mistake. And because there was an understanding that there is nothing one user can do what another can't if they can undo. So please contribute, and thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you. There are two mics lined up, mic one, mic two, mic three. Are there questions? Number two.
I wanted to really recommend your essay, Turing Complete User, to the audience here. I read it, I think, when Cory Doctorow recommended it, and Cory is also someone who's very concerned about the language that we use to talk about the people who interact with systems. And he's also concerned about the use of the word consumer. And he often likes to talk about an audience or about readers rather than a consumer. Also trying to put in the foreground the person who's actively dealing with the system. So I thought your essay was very exciting and raised many of the same exciting concepts about human creativity and intelligence. I wanted to ask if you were familiar with a site called Revealing Errors, which was created by my friend Mako Hill, and he's also concerned with making computers visible to people as a matter of showing power relationships in technology. So he looks at errors that occur in computer systems as a way of getting people to think about who created the system. What does the system do? How can the system fail? What decisions and values are embodied in the system? Have you seen the Revealing Errors?
No, but I know I memorized the title.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Questions from the internet? Yes, no. Then number two.
Yeah. I think that user interface and security are two parts of the same spectrum, how people deal with machines. And you're talking about Turing complete user, and that presupposes Turing complete interfaces. So I think if you have stateful interfaces, a lot of the problems that you listed do not come up. For example, the right to log out is only Only a problem because...
We have what interfaces? I didn't understand.
Stateful. Like, if you have state transitions that are explicit, but you do not have a Turing-complete interface that can do anything.
Yeah, you are...
Like a finite state machine, for example, several screens, and you can only switch between them. The right to log out is only an issue because people use, for example, cookies and do not build stateful interfaces. So I think maybe there can be an explicit mathematical model of interfaces. Do you think that's possible? Like of interfaces that are usable without being a Turing-complete user, that are not confusing and that do not allow specific errors?
I really don't see this contradiction or or what you are trying to negotiate.
Like,
I'm talking about ambiguity.
And
believing in the power
that.
Of user and the user's involvement and the and making decisions, constant small decisions, big decisions all the time. You are talking about now the right.
I think that this ambiguity can only come up if the computer provides sufficient powerful language to have ambiguity. For example, if you have a simple interface, a push button, there is no ambiguity. It's either to be pressed or not to be pressed. So you don't have a Turing-complete user in that case, and you do not have confusion, and you do not need any explicit rights in regards to that button.
But why should we now imagine this buttons, if we are talking about the
You can still have a useful interface while reducing its expressive power. You can have software that only allows to do user useful things without having, for example, contradictory states. That so you could build a library that of user interface widgets that don't confuse users. I think. Maybe let's talk about this later.
Yeah, because...
Okay, number two.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask, what do you think about the relation between interfaces and using interfaces and the way human beings perceive the world and the...
The way they what?
The way they perceive the world. And the development of knowledge and a relationship to objects in the world and reality in general.
You mean on the what do they have? What the effect they have on users? The interfaces. How they form the picture of the world?
Yes.
Yeah, they are. These are. It's huge the impact of the interface. Yeah, you've seen there. If you open the Justin Bieber app and see the picture of the world through this app, it is a very small and pitiful world. it's just the answer is huge, the impact. Yeah. That's why there should be a lot of consciousness involved into creating software.
Okay, thanks again, Liga, and thank you all.